ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय इत्यात्मभूर आत्मा मानेना त्रुत्यनेहसा पुरोवाद आद्भम कृदंथम धादृशे सकलम हरिम। When Lord Brahma returned after a moment of time had passed, according to his own measurement, he saw that although by human measurement a complete year had passed, Lord Krishna, after all that time, was engaged just as before in playing with the boys and calves, who were his expansions. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Brahma had gone away for only a moment of his time, but when he returned, a human year of time had passed. On different planets, the calculation of time is different. To give an example, a man-made satellite may orbit the Earth in an hour and 25 minutes, and thus complete one full day, although a day ordinarily takes 24 hours for those living on Earth. Therefore, what was but a moment for Brahma was 1 year on Earth. Krishna continued to expand himself in so many forms for 1 year, but by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, no one could understand this but Balaram. After one moment of Brahma's calculation, Brahma came back to see the fun caused by his stealing the boys and calves. But he was also afraid that he was playing with fire. Krishna was his master, and he had played mischief for fun by taking away Krishna's calves and boys. He was really anxious, so he did not stay away very long. He came back after a moment of his calculation. When Brahma returned, he saw that all the boys, calves, and cows were playing with Krishna in the same way as when he had come upon them. By Krishna's display of Yoga Maya, the same pastimes were going on without any change. On the day when Lord Brahma had first come, Baladev could not go with Krishna and the cowherd boys, for it was his birthday, and his mother had kept him back for the proper ceremonial bath called Santika Snan. Therefore, Lord Baladev was not taken by Brahma at that time. Now, 1 year later, Brahma returned, and because he returned on exactly the same day, Baladev was again kept at home for his birthday. Therefore, although this verse mentions that Brahma saw Krishna and all the cowherd boys, Baladev is not mentioned. It was 5 or 6 days earlier that Baladev had inquired from Krishna about the extraordinary affection of the cows and cowherd men. But now, when Brahma returned, Brahma saw all the calves and cowherd boys playing with Krishna as expansions of Krishna. But he did not see Baladev, as in the previous year. Lord Baladev did not go to the woods on the day Lord Brahma appeared there. Tavad ityatmabhur atma manena trutyanehasa Purovad Adbham Kridantham Dadrise Sakalam Harim. When Lord Brahma returned after a moment of time had passed, according to his own measurement, he saw that although by human measurement a complete year had passed, Lord Krishna, after all that time, was engaged just as before in playing with the boys and calves who were his expansions. Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvas Karanam Karanam. Lord Brahma is Ishvara. He is the controller, the Lord of this universe. In fact, every living being, from Lord Brahma down to the Indragopa, the insignificant insect, has some power of Ishvara, some power to control. It is said in the Bhagavatam, Jiva Jivasya Jivanam, that in this material world, the strong always have control over the weak. In fact, in this world, the weak is the food for the strong. And therefore, we find even in the animal kingdom, whoever is more powerful has the great tendency to lord it over whoever is less than themselves. The bird is more powerful than the insect, so he eats them, controls them. The cat is more powerful than the bird, so he eats the bird. The dog is the more powerful than the cat, so he eats the cat. The tiger more than the dog, so he eats the dog. And human beings, because of their developed intelligence, although physically they may not be stronger than many of the lower animals, intelligence gives him great power and strength by which man, with the animal consciousness, conquers over the lower species. And even in human civilization, the rich want to control the poor, the educated want to control the uneducated, the strong want to control the weak. This is the hard struggle for existence. This is material life. Everyone aspires for the position of controller, of lord, of master. And we find so much conflict in America in the city streets. There are street gangs trying to have control over various neighborhoods. And therefore, in practically every city in the country, there is regularly beatings, murders, and all sorts of terrible crimes. Just trying to claim control over a certain property. Just like when you go to someone's house, the dog wants to think that I am the controller of this property. Ruff, ruff, ruff. You have no right to come to my house. Huh? What do you think dogs are barking at? Dogs are barking at you and me and whoever comes by just to show out of their sense of pride that I am the controller, I am the proprietor, I am Ishvara. This is my property. Go away. If you want to come, you have to get my blessings. Huh? So this is the consciousness of dogs. And factually, this whole world is consciousness of dogs. Srila Prabhupada used to even say the United Nations. This is my nation. No, this is my nation. No, this is my nation. And this way they were barking like dogs at each other. And when you go to the immigration of another country, You come to India, you stand in line longer than any other country in the world. You stand in line for perhaps an hour. And then when you get to the front desk, ruff, 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 what do you want? Why are you here? Why have you come? I am in control. You cannot enter without my stamp of approval. Huh? I am the Lord. I am the Master. And of course, all the wars, whether they be in the name of religion, or whether they be in the name of nationalism, or whether they be in the name of some virtuous philanthropic ideal, they are all in the name of different Ishwaras trying to become Parameshwara. Different controllers trying to be the supreme controller. So this is the fundamental disease in this entire material creation. Everyone wants to be controller. Everyone wants to be in power over others, whether on a small scale or a large scale. Here we find the supreme controller of this entire universe, Lord Brahma, who everyone is under the control of. He is the source of everyone. Psychologically, this, on a subtle platform, is why most people want to have children. Because in their own little capacity, they can be Lord Brahmas. They can be creators. They can have offspring, which are coming from them, from me. Huh? So in this way, of course, in Krishna consciousness, people have children as a humble service to the Lord. That let me bring this child into this world, my Lord. And they do all sadhana, and they do all garbhadan samskara. And what is the purpose of all this? To get this controlling mentality out of consciousness. To have child for the purpose of my Lord, it is your child. Let me care for him on your behalf, or her on your behalf. And let me train this child in such a way to do wonderful things for you in this world. That is Krishna conscious way of having children. But without Krishna consciousness, on whatever level, either on gross level or subtle level, we want to have children because this very, very refined ego wants to be in the position of Brahma, the controller, the source, the master. This child is coming from me, and this child will be controlled by me. This child will be protected by me, nourished by me, obedient to me. And in my own little Brahma Loka, called my house, I will be the Lord and Master. Huh? I will be the controller. And by making lots and lots of money, I will make my Brahma Loka bigger and bigger and bigger, more powerful, with more influence over other lesser lokas. Huh? This is the mentality of material life. Ishwara. But there is no competition to Lord Brahma. Nor will there ever be. Even the greatest asuras, the demons like Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, all of these great conquerors, even though they were able to conquer Indra, who has his field of control, and Vayu, and Varuna, and Agni, and Surya, who have their fields of control. No demon that we ever read of was able to ever even attempt to conquer the control position of Brahma. He's secure. In fact, in this entire universe, he's the only one with an abode that is relatively secure.
So what does Krishna say?
Abrama bhuvana loka punara vartanorjana mamupetyatu konteya punara janmana vidyate.
From Brahma loka down to Patala loka, they are all places of misery.
Why?
Ishvara parama krishna satchidananda vigraha anadira adira govinda sarvakarana akaranam.
Because Krishna says, I am the supreme controller. From Brahma loka down to Patala loka, in the form of time, I control all.
And here we have the example. We are all under the control of time. For us, 100 years seems like a long time. But 100 years means, by the force of time, by the power of Parameshwar Krishna, we are being devoured. We are being destroyed by the control of Krishna at every moment, physically.
But Lord Brahma, our 100 years are his 100 moments.
And according to the Shastra, a moment, lava matra, is 1/12 of a second.
So if we can somehow or other live for 100 years, it's only a few seconds for Brahma.
And yet still, he is under the control of time.
In due course, even Brahma, in all of his abode, in all of his opulence, in all of his power, in all of his control, will be vanquished by the force of Krishna.
So in the material world, in the form of time, Krishna is the supreme master, the supreme controller of all living beings without exception.
Nityo nityanam, chetanas chetananam, eko bahunam yo vidatati kaman.
And in the spiritual world, Krishna is the supreme controller, but not by time. In the spiritual world, time is conspicuous by its absence. In the spiritual world, Krishna is the supreme controller because he controls everyone by his beauty, by his opulence, by his love. And this is the difference between material life and spiritual life. In material life, every living being from Brahma down to the meanest insect is controlled by the all-devouring, fearful force of time, which is killing us at every second.
Jiva, jiva, sajivanam.
The stronger beings are always the food for the younger beings, little beings.
Well, time is eating everybody, eating you slowly, whoever you are.
Because Krishna is the biggest person, the most powerful person.
So this is material life. Being under the control of the inferior energy of Krishna time and the three modes of material nature which causes adiatmaka, adidaivaka, and adibhautaka.
Being under the control of the sufferings of our own body and mind, the sufferings of other living beings, and the sufferings of uncontrollable natural disturbances.
But spiritual consciousness means to be completely 100% subordinate and under the control of the sweetness of Krishna, the beauty of Krishna, the attraction of Krishna, and love of Krishna. That is the difference.
Do we want to be controlled by death and pain, or do we want to be controlled by love, sweetness, and beauty? That is the question we must ask. But in all circumstances, Krishna is Ishvara Parama. He is the supreme controller. And when we accept that, when we admit that, and we surrender to Krishna, factually we're already surrendered to Krishna.
At every moment, as we're saying, we're surrendering to Krishna in time. We're surrendering to Krishna with every breath.
We cannot breathe without the air that Krishna supplies. We are surrendering to Krishna.
What is Krishna consciousness?
to simply recognize and acknowledge that we are surrendering to Krishna. To surrender to Him favorably rather than unfavorably. In this world, the materialist, atheistic class of men and the pseudo-religionists, they are all surrendering to Krishna unwillingly. But they're all surrendering. Srila Prabhupada used to say, at the time of death, either you bow down prostrate before the Lord as a corpse, or you, in life, you bow down prostrate before the Lord in love. But in either case, you're going to offer your full obeisances to Krishna in surrender. The difference is one is ecstatic and one is terribly, terribly painful and frustrated. Therefore, to surrender to Krishna simply means to do what you inevitably must do willfully, gratefully, with love, rather than unwillingly, in a battle, in fear. That is the difference. Today is Janamastami. Today is the day when we come together to recognize and to celebrate the supreme position of Sri Krishna. And one who understands the transcendental nature of Krishna never has to suffer the repetition of birth and death again in this material world. Janama karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatpata tyatva deham punarjanmai naiti mameti sorajana. Why does Krishna descend into this world? Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanaradhaya sambhavami yuge yuge yada yada hi dharmasya glanira bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. Krishna comes into this world to explain to us His supreme position. Otherwise, how could we ever figure it out with our tiny little brains? The jivatma, who is under the conditionings of material nature, can never come to mental or intellectual conclusions on their own of what is God and how to approach God. Only when Krishna, by His own causeless mercy, descends into this world to explain to us step by step who we are, who is the Supreme Absolute Truth, what is our relationship and how to attain the realization of that relationship. Only by His mercy can we have the proper understanding. Therefore, we find whenever the Lord descends in this world, by His words and by His example, He shows us the way back home, back to Godhead. Krishna explains in Gita, Sarva dharman paritya ya mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papi bhyo moksha ishami ma sucha. That there are so many religions, there are so many scriptures. The conclusion is to surrender to me. And without surrendering to me, you cannot come to me. You cannot become transcendental to fear and to death. Sisi Radha Gopinath ki jai. And Lord Sri Krishna, how merciful, how loving, how kind upon us. Although we have been rebuking His orders moment after moment, birth after birth, by acting independent for our own sense enjoyment, we have been endeavoring in so many ways to make ourselves God, to make ourselves the enjoyer, to make ourselves the controller. Krishna is so kind that not only does he explain to us the way, but he performs such wonderful, wonderful pastimes when he comes to this earth just to attract our minds, just to attract our hearts, just to awaken our natural love. Srila Prabhupada would explain that Krishna says in Gita that he comes to protect the pious, to annihilate the miscreants, and to reestablish the principles of religion. But factually, he does not have to come personally to do those things. Through his diversified energies, he could accomplish any of these tasks. Or even through his empowered servants, the Mahatmas. But why does Krishna come? Ultimately, to give pleasure to his pure devotees and to attract the hearts of the innocent. We read about the appearance of Lord Narasimha Dev. Why did he have to come in such a form to kill Hiranyakashipu? Did he really come to protect Prahlad? What do you think? That was external. His external reason was to come to protect Prahlad. Because factually, as the super soul in the heart, he should have just taken his Sudarshan chakra and just gone like this, and Hiranyakashipu's heart would have been split in millions of pieces and he would have died. All he had to do is just think. Hiranyakashipu's heart should stop. It would stop. He's the supreme master, the supreme controller. Why did he go through so much incredible, extravagant arrangement to appear as a half man, half lion? A form nobody has ever seen. Not to protect Prahlad. To give pleasure to Prahlad. That is why he appeared as Narasimha Dev. Externally to protect, but the real internal reason was to give pleasure. My devotee, what he has done for me, let me do something so wonderful for him that he finds transcendental ecstasy in seeing this wonderful form. He arranged this most incredible form. He created it himself, simply for the pleasure of his devotee. And not only Prahlad, but the pleasure of all his devotees for all time to come. To attract our hearts, to attract our minds, to attract our love. That is why Krishna appears in this world. And why Krishna appeared in such a way to Vasudev and Devaki. Of course, the demigods, it is explained in the Bhagavatam, they all stood at the ocean of milk with Lord Brahma chanting the Purusha Shukta prayers, beseeching Chirodakshayi Vishnu to incarnate, to relieve the burden of the world of these great asuras and demons like Jarasandha and Kamsa and Bhomasura. It is explained that even the Mother Earth, in the form of a cow with folded hands, was begging and praying, please, I cannot tolerate the exploitation of these demons just wandering everywhere, no one able to check them, conquering the innocent, manipulating the gifts of God for their own sinful purposes. So the voice spoke through Brahma to all of the demigods, and through the demigods to all of the universe, that because you are all coming to take shelter of me in the face of the demoniac class who have conquered you all. I am going to descend to this world, annihilate them, and protect you. So externally, yes, Sri Krishna appeared to destroy all these demons. And how many demons he destroyed? In Vrindavan, in Gokul, in Mathura, in Dwarka, in Kurukshetra, wherever Krishna went, he was killing so many demons. But is that really why he appeared? He could have killed those demons in so many wonderful ways. Did he have to appear in his original form, the source of all avatars? He appeared in the prison cell of Kamsa in Mathura in the form of this most illustrious, beautiful child, baby. Just to attract our hearts. Just to steal our affection away from the mortal forms of illusion in this world back to his loving service. That is why he appeared. As a little baby. Such a beautiful baby. When he appeared as Forearm Narayan, he told Vasudev that I will come in this little form of a baby, Krishna, Gopal, and take me across Jamuna to Gokul and trade me with the son just born of Jashodamai or the daughter just born of Jashodamai. So in this way, this beautiful little baby who is the supreme, most attractive form in all of existence appeared in a prison. The most unlikely, the place that nobody wants to be. Who wants to go to prison? That's like the greatest threat, to go to prison. The government uses that threat to somehow or other keep the criminals from breaking laws and exploiting others. So the least likely place anyone wants to be, Krishna took birth there. Why? He wanted to show that he will take birth wherever his devotees are willing to surrender, even to what they like least for him. Vasudeva and Devaki were having children just to fulfill the mission of the Lord, and they were willing to go to prison on behalf of the Lord. They were willing to suffer on behalf of the Lord. In other words, they were surrendered in toto to the will of God. That is where Krishna appears. That is who Krishna appears to. And then when he was brought to Gokul, his beautiful childhood pastimes, he was learning how to walk. He was drinking the milk of his mother. He was playing with his friends. He was crying like an ordinary child. In this way, Krishna did not come simply to kill demons. Krishna came to kill our propensity for trying to enjoy apart from him. Krishna came to kill the demon of envy in our own hearts. By his beauty, by his grace, and by his love. by Krishna's name, by Krishna's beautiful, loving pastimes, by his most beautiful form, by his most illustrious qualities, by the reciprocation he has with his wonderful devotees, by the sound of his flute, by the extraordinary knowledge of his words, by the beauty of his dham, Krishna descends to attract our hearts because he is all attractive. Therefore, if we simply learn how to attentively and submissively hear the glories of the Lord, serve the will of the Lord, and chant the holy names of the Lord, Krishna will take birth within our lives. That will be the perfection. The perfection of everything we want. The fulfillment of our innermost desires. The desire for pure love. Divine ecstasy in his loving service. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare. So this is why we celebrate Janamastami. People who are practicing the principles of religiosity, they practice Janamastami because they think we will get some punya, we will get some pious credits by performing these rituals and observing these bhajans and so forth. But this is not the way the acharyas have taught. The celebration of Janmashtami is an opportunity for us to surrender ourselves in the presence of God. It is an opportunity to surrender our whole day. We fast. Why? As a gesture of surrendering our lives before the Lord. As a gesture of willing to make our life a sacrifice for the Lord. Fasting is a sacrifice. But it is not only just being hungry all day, but it is meant to be an internal symbol of an expression to Krishna that I want to sacrifice my life to you. I'm willing to accept any inconvenience for you, my Lord. That should be our consciousness when we're fasting. When we feel the pangs of hunger, we shouldn't be thinking, only 4 more hours and I get to eat prasad. You will not make much advancement through that consciousness. When you feel the pangs of hunger, you should think, Krishna, for you, I am just trying to show you that I'm hungry for you. I am starving for you because you're going to appear at midnight. And until you appear, I don't want anything else. I'm starving for you. I'm thirsting for you. For your prasad, for your mercy. That should be our consciousness. And throughout the day when we are singing beautiful bhajans, decorating the deities, decorating the temple, our consciousness should be that Krishna, by glorifying you, by making wonderful arrangements for your enjoyment, you will appear within my life, within my heart. We do not practice things simply ritualistically, but we practice whatever we do in consciousness of our purpose and our goal, which is to please Krishna. So why we make so many grand arrangements? Because factually Krishna has appeared in this world to attract the hearts of everyone. And as his servants, we alone do not want to be attracted. We want to be an instrument, a part of Krishna's divine plan to attract the hearts of everyone.
That is why for so many weeks devotees have been going, doing the Sankirtan, renting big halls, making all grand arrangements, going through all austerities, getting sick, giving up sleeping, to make so many wonderful plans to be a part of Krishna's mission, which is coming to us through our spiritual master, to attract the whole world back to the lotus feet of the Lord. Krishna comes to attract us all. So let us hear and chant the glories of the Lord and learn how to reciprocate with his mercy. And let us preach by our words, by our actions, to assist in the fulfillment of Krishna's real mission, to attract the souls, all souls, back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there any questions?
How is that? Though Krishna comes on this earth to give pleasure to his devotees, but he never mentions in the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. He always says, it's not mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna only says that he comes on this earth to protect the pious and annihilate the miscreants, but he never says a word about giving pleasure to his devotees.
In the Bhagavatam, which is the postgraduate study of the Gita, it is explained throughout, not only through the words of the Lord, but through the examples of the Lord.
And we can understand the scripture only through the realizations of the acharyas. You cannot understand Bhagavad Gita in its truth or its essence on your own. The internal meaning and significance of the Gita is revealed through the pure devotees. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that you can read the scriptures for the rest of eternity and you'll never understand Krishna. Krishna can only be understood through the grace of the pure devotees.
And Krishna explains to Arjuna, bhakto shime shakachiti rahasyam yetadutamam, that you can only understand this knowledge because you are my friend and devotee. So in this way we must understand. Krishna explains it indirectly. Shigalim, would you like to comment on that? Indirectly means that it's there. It's understood. But that as understanding is only revealed to the great acharyas through parampara. That's why Krishna says, Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitram Itam Uttamam. This knowledge is the king of education and is the most secret of all secrets. The words are there. But the secret understanding of those words is revealed by the acharyas. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada called his Gita the Bhagavad Gita as it is.
Sarvadharman Puritya Jamam Ekam Sharanam Braja.
The Bhagavad Gita as it is can only be understood by those who have practiced the final instruction, which means to completely surrender to Krishna. When Krishna says surrender to me, that means surrender to Krishna. That's Bhagavad Gita as it is. And when you surrender to Krishna, then the true realizations of the Gita are revealed. And if we have not surrendered to Krishna, we must simply hear the Gita from someone who has surrendered to Krishna. He can reveal the truth and the substance of the Gita. Because this is Bhagavatam philosophy, that the Lord appears to give pleasure to His devotees. Therefore, the person Bhagavat, in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, is teaching Bhagavad Gita from the point of view of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the Bhagavad Gita, the understanding of Ras, of Vrindavan, of Goloka, is not given. Bhagavad Gita is Kurukshetra Lila. But the great Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas explain the Gita from the point of view of Vrindavan Lila, the total surrender of the gopis. They are explaining Gita from that point of view. Mahaprabhu's mission. Therefore, this explanation is understood through the eyes of the Bhagavatam. Yes?
Is suffering and helplessness a necessary condition for surrender? Because when one is very happy, that feeling of surrender is very, very temporary. And it doesn't stay with us for a very long time, whenever we are joyous. But when we suffer, when we feel utterly helpless, I feel that one can make an attempt to surrender. So is this a necessary condition?
In the spiritual world, it is not necessary. Because the spiritual world is a place where we naturally remember Krishna. Because we are in our pure state. But in this material world, our tendency is to forget moment after moment. So generally the helpless conditions of suffering very intensely remind of us of our need to take shelter of Sri Krishna. So we should welcome these things. Tathena kampam sushamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vibhagam Hridvagvapurvir vidatam namaste jivetayas mukti pade sadayabhak. Lord Brahma explains that in this very chapter we will read how one who, even in the most difficult conditions of life, even in suffering and pain, is able to, with folded palms, offer their obeisances to Krishna, taking shelter of his lotus feet. Such a person is qualified for the liberated platform of Krishna consciousness. You see, God is not cruel. Krishna is the God of love. Why would He create suffering and misery if we didn't need it? If we're getting it, that means we need it. And that is His love. One more question.
Maharaj, you are talking about doing service, accepting the service willingly. But what happened to the service which is not accepted willingly? And you are still successful in such service. In the bargain, you must be just causing pains to others or maybe causing an offense to others. What happened to such service? Service which is accepted unwillingly, but you are successful in that service. And in the bargain, you may be causing lots of offenses to others unknowingly. What happened to such services?
Committing offenses?
Maybe. Unknowingly, you must be committing offenses.
If you're unknowingly, then it is not much offensive.
Knowingly
is offensive.
What happened to such services?
Huh?
What happened to such services when you accept it unwillingly and you still do it? And when you're successful in such services?
Simply by accepting service, there is purification. But if we accept it unwillingly, we are just unnecessarily cheating ourselves of so much of the mercy of the Lord. If you're going to do it anyway, and you just submit yourself and do it out of love, or out of at least a grateful form of affection, then you get maximum benefit. If you do the same thing out of force, it's good in the sense that you're being trained, but you are cheating yourself of the true value of that service. Better to do your service unwillingly than to not do it at all. Because at least by learning how to be disciplined in this way, gradually you'll be able to accept willingly. To the degree we submit with a grateful heart, to that degree we receive the mercy of Krishna.
Somehow or other, this tendency of controlling is not going in from our heart. Although philosophically we are convinced that we cannot control. Grossly, we understand it that something is going wrong. We just accept it. Or it is not in my control. But in subtle way, we are disturbed or somewhat frustrated at why he has not done whatever I have told him. And finally we get disturbed. So how to see it in a subtle way also, that controlling tendency altogether goes away from our heart?
Through purification only, by attentively chanting Krishna's name, by submissively hearing his words, by humbly serving Guru and the Vaishnavas, gradually, by not acting as a controller in this way, that spirit of being a controller is removed from our heart. Through the process of properly following the process of Krishna consciousness, by the grace of God, this can be attained. There's no other way. You cannot do it. Only Krishna can save us. By learning how to take shelter of him, by serving the words of the spiritual master, by hearing and chanting his glories, Krishna removes the spirit to lord it over and replaces it with the spirit to serve. To serve forever.